evening, I'd like to call this meeting to order. Would you please stand and join me in a Pledge of Allegiance to the flag?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic which stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
I'll now take roll call. Dan Klein.
Here.
Ann Corman.
Present.
Mike Lane.
Here.
Leslyn McBean-Claiborne.
Present.
Dave McKenna.
Here.
Glenn Morey.
Here.
Martha Robertson.
Here.
Mike Sigler.
Here.
Shauna Black.
Here.
Amanda Champion.
Here.
Deborah Dawson.
Here.
Henry Granison.
Here and present.
Here and present.
Rich John.
Here.
Anna Kellis.
Here.
14 members present. The first order of business tonight is the election of a temporary chair. I'd like to open the floor for nominations. Martha Robertson.
I would like to nominate Mike Sigler for temporary chair of the legislature.
Is there a second? Glenn Morey. Are there any other nominations? May I have a motion to close nominations, please? Ann Corman. Seconded by Deborah Dawson. All those in favor of closing nominations, signify with aye or raise your hands. Any opposed? That's unanimous. All those in favor of nominating Mike Sigler as temporary chair, please raise your hands. Any opposed? That's unanimous.
You all know that the next campaign commercials write themselves. Deborah Dawson, in a surprise move, votes for Mike Sigler for chairman. Tompkins County Legislature. It's fantastic. Frank Prodi used to give a little speech here. I'm not going to actually do that. I do want to say that this is a good day, solid, ever since we even broke from Cayuga and Seneca counties and formed our own county. This is a momentous day. And I want to say that it's a big day for me as a Republican, because the last time we won a presidential race in this county was Ronald Reagan. And then before that, though, you guys didn't win at all. LBJ won, and then in 1912, you guys won a presidency. So, the historical balance has reared its head. So, anyway, I'm going to call this into session right now. I get to do that. And I would like to take nominations for chairman of the Tompkins County Legislature. Do I hear a nomination? Dan Klein.
I would like to nominate Mike Lane for chair of the legislature. At our last meeting, we heard a counting of a bunch of accomplishments that Tompkins County has experienced over the last 10 years, over the last decade. And Mike Lane was on the legislature for those 10 years. Mike Lane was chair of the legislature for 4 of those years, so clearly he had a big hand in germinating and nurturing and bringing to fruition a lot of those projects. I was lucky enough to be vice chair for 2 of the years that Mike was chair, and so I had a front row seat to see Mike in action. And one thing that I really appreciate about Mike is that he does not let his politics get in the way of his leadership. And that's a trait that I really value, especially in these hyper-partisan times. Before coming to the legislature, Mike was mayor of Dryden, the village of Dryden. And I think the knowledge and experience that he brings from being on a local government, a government that's even more local than the county government, is something that's very valuable both to the legislature and to the county as a whole. So it's in that spirit of benefit to the legislature and benefit to the county that I am honored to nominate Mike Lane for chair of the legislature.
Okay, thank you very much, Dan. And do I have a second? Henry.
Yes, I'd like to second Mike Lane's nomination for chair of the legislature.
I'd also like to basically agree with what Dan has said about Mike, all his accolades, but I'd also like to remember that one of Mike's favorite phrases is that he's the, that as chair, he's first among equals within this group. And I want to just press on him to say that, that this is the way he will lead us into the next year. Thank you.
Okay. So do I have any more nominations for chair of the legislature? Martha Robertson.
I'm proud to nominate Anna Kellis for chair of the legislature. I served under Mike with for a number, all those years, and he was a fine chair. But I have to say that was a different time with a very different legislature. So as far as the accomplishments of the last 10 years, obviously the things that we do here are really a team effort. But leadership really matters. And who represents the legislature really matters, even though that person certainly is the first among equals. So my question is, what does the county need now? What kind of leadership does this moment require? In my view, yeah, we've been very engaged at the state level. We've been very engaged at the federal level, too. And it, now is no time to step back from that engagement. Tomorrow we'll hear the State of the State address. And then following that in a couple of weeks, the state budget. We're hearing news about billions of dollars in a deficit at the state level. We know what that means. That's coming down on us. And I think we all understand NYSAC is really our vehicle to speak at the state level, to try to make our concerns heard. And I'm proud that Anna, as soon as she joined the legislature in 2016, jumped into NYSAC with both feet. She's been to almost every NYSAC conference since, you know, the two a year since she was elected. She got herself on two standing committees, not one but two, and even last fall gave a workshop at NYSAC. She's very well known there and engaged and understands how important that role is, and I know a lot of folks go to NYSAC, and it is a way that we hear what other counties are doing, learn about best practices, but also share what we're doing that in many cases is ahead of the curve. So I'm looking forward to Anna representing us in that venue. But there's also the issue of closer to home. What are the big issues we're facing here? I think we could probably agree that equity and diversity and inclusion are two of our biggest, is one of our biggest concerns. We've certainly put money into Chief Diversity Officer and looking to reboot the Human Rights Office. These are really big issues for us now. And Anna, since she joined the Ledge, has been committed to those issues. She walks the walk, joined WDIC right away, and became its vice chair, which she's been for 4 years, and many other engagements with the community on that those issues. I think we probably agree that climate maybe overrides everything. You may not know that. I didn't realize that Anna's bachelor's was in environmental studies. I mean, it's not a Johnny-come-lately kind of issue for her. It's a core issue. She was, among other things, in her career, director of the Green Resource Hub for 4 years. So this is a key part of Anna's background and priorities in life. So I think these are both areas where we could really profit from somebody who can express the values of the legislature well locally and state at the state level. Locally, I mean, there's nobody more engaged than Anna in many, many networks around the community. I just asked her recently whether this would be her full-time priority. I know she has a number of other commitments, and she said absolutely. Being chair would be her full-time job. This is something that I think would benefit everybody on the legislature but especially everybody in the community as well. So I'm proud to nominate Anna for chair.
Thank you, Martha. Do I have a second for Anna for chair? Glenn Morey. All right. Glenn Morey seconds. Do I have any more nominations for anyone for chair? Seeing no more nominations, then the nominations are closed. Do we move on to a vote?
Should have a motion to close nominations.
Oh, do I have a motion to close nominations? Yes, Chris John. Seconded by Amanda. Okay, nominations now being closed. We're going to move to a vote. I guess I just say, do I have a number of votes for Michael Lane for chairman of the Tompkins County Legislature? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. I have 7 votes. Do I have votes for Anna Kellis for chairwoman of the Tompkins County Legislature? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. I have 7 votes there. Is everybody sure on their vote?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so it's 7-7. It's a tie. So I'm going to ask everybody to vote again, and we'll see where we go. Can I see the number of hands again for voting for Mike Lane for chairman of the Tompkins County Legislature? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. 7. And can I see the hands for those who want to vote for Anna Kellis for chairwoman of the Tompkins County Legislature? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. 7-7. All right, so we're at a stalemate, not a stalemate. I know that we're going to – I've talked to my Democratic colleagues. They would like to caucus to talk about this. I, as the chairperson, am going to graciously let them use my office.
Point of order.
Oh, I'm sorry, Dan. Go ahead.
Don't we need a motion to go into caucus?
Oh, well, I don't know if you motion to go into caucus.
Motion for a recess. I'd like to
motion
move
for
that we
recess.
Have a recess.
Thank you, Martha. So I need a motion for a recess. Martha, second. Dave?
Yeah.
Oh, Amanda? Yes. I'm sorry, discussion?
I did not know the Democrats were going to caucus.
Nor did I.
Nor did I.
Okay. That is completely up to your party. I mean, we can recess, and you guys can maybe vote amongst yourselves. We can shut the cameras down, and you guys can vote whether to caucus or not, or you can come back later. Yes, Martha?
The motion is for a recess.
Okay.
That's all.
All right. Fair enough. So a motion for a recess is on the floor. We have a motion and a second. All those in favor of a recess? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. All those opposed? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. So it's 7-7, so no recess. So we're just going to move on with the agenda then. So the next thing on the agenda is I'm going to dispense with the election of the vice chair unless there's a motion on the floor. I mean, is there a motion on the floor? Okay, I'm sorry. I figured it would go as a package. Sorry, Deborah. Do I have a motion on the floor for a vice chair?
Yeah.
Deborah, I'm sorry.
Are you asking for a nomination?
I'm asking for a nomination for vice chair of the Tompkins County Legislature.
I believe that...
Yes, John.
I think like what we've done...
Use your mic. ...is you have to lay on the table the motion...
For
regarding
chair.
The election of the chair.
So I need a motion to lay it on the table.
Yes.
Okay. So I need a motion. Dan, do you motion?
Yeah.
So Dan is motioning to lay the election of a chairperson on the table for now. Deborah, you're second?
Wait. Laying it on the table meaning what? Table?
Means we come back to it. Yeah.
For chair.
For chair.
Go on unless we
for chair.
Oh, okay. Yes.
Okay.
I'll second that.
All those in favor for laying it on the table?
A question, point of order. Until when is there a...
Yeah, could I...
Please.
So the last time, I'll just... The last time, I think it was in 2013, that we had a tie, 7-7.
Mm-hmm.
And after several votes, which is what the legislature is supposed to do, is keep voting. What it was moved is to lay it on the table till the end of the other regular business of the legislature.
Okay.
And then bring it back at the end. Typically, it is the person who is elected chair that then does the election of the vice chair, which is really the way it's called for in the rules. So I think if we're going to you know, if the legislature doesn't wish to vote now, I think the best thing to do is to lay on the table until the completion of the other business and then come back to that.
So should we lay vice chair on the table, too, or at least I need to take a vote for that.
Right. Lay everything on the table. Right.
Are they separate agenda items, though, so I'd have to do it separately? Or do I move it all as one piece?
No, I think someone could move to lay on the table the elections until the completion of the rest of the business.
Okay, thank you. So do I have a motion to lay?
Question.
Yes.
Question for Jonathan. If not all members can stay till the end of the meeting or the end of the agenda, I know that some members not feeling well, and the issue stays as is, does it move to the next legislative meeting?
Well, what happened in the past, actually the last time, that's exactly what happened, because when it came back, the votes continued to be 7-7, so it was adjourned and taken up at the next legislative meeting. I should say that if the positions remain vacant for 30 days, someone is appointed by the clerk until the clerk of the county, not Kathy, until the legislature makes an appointment.
Dan.
Mike.
Amanda first.
Just on that, I actually read the rules today, and it said that that's only the case if there's a vacancy or a death or a removal.
Consider that there, if nobody is elected for 30 days, that there's a vacancy. And okay. That's what we decided last time. And I think that works pretty well because it forces you to make a decision within 30 days.
Probably update.
And it really is a vacancy.
Then to make that clear.
Dan.
Jonathan, I'm sorry. I do not see in the rules where it says we should not be electing a vice chair at this time. Can you specify what rule you're looking at?
Sure. Well, if you go through the procedure for the under the rules of the legislature, the procedure for the election of representatives, what it describes is first the chair is elected, then the chair comes up and does the nominations for the vice chair.
I don't see that in the rules. I'm wondering if you could point that out where that is. It just says, well, the part I see says, shall be election of the chair and vice chair of the legislature. Nomination shall be made from the floor.
District with 15 members.
Seemed like such a good idea at the time.
Bad order.
I mean, exactly what it says is, you know, at the organizational meeting, the clerk or deputy clerk shall provide until a temporary chair be chosen, and the next order of business shall be the election of a chair of the legislature and a vice chair of the legislature. We've always had that once the chair is elected, that person then is the chair, and the temporary chair is no longer, serving, no longer chair, and then the chair conducts the, one could interpret it like you, but in the practical matter, what it contemplates is that, you know, the chair is then elected and then the chair conducts the meeting. It doesn't say that, but given that the first election is the chair, it is the chair who then takes over from the vice chair. The temporary chair, excuse me.
I mean, I don't interpret it that way. I don't see it written that way. And if I were running the meeting, I would entertain a nomination for vice chair at this moment.
Mike.
I don't have a big problem with that, Dan, to be honest with you. I think that it's going to end probably, maybe not. Maybe it'll end a different way. We'll see. Yes, Martha.
In fact, we have not successfully elected a chair, so there's nobody to conduct the vice chair election. I think that's what you're saying, Jonathan.
Right. I mean, that's what it contemplates, is that the chair is elected first, and then given that the chair has been elected, the temporary chair is no longer acting, and then the chair conducts that.
So in 2013, we didn't set aside the chair vote and move on to vice chair. No. We held up and did both. We waited on both of them
together. And there's a sense to doing it in that the, and it may not be the case in this particular circumstance, but it could be that the selection of the chair might affect the selection of the vice chair. So it kind of makes sense to do it that way.
That's right. Somebody who loses one might decide to run for the second office. I think that's only fair that we do it in the correct order.
Yeah, I think that's what it contemplated.
And we've done it in the past where we waited 2 weeks.
That is exactly why we did it. It was because the second place person wouldn't have an opportunity then to run. So, Dan, I remember that distinctly.
I have no doubt that that was what was done in 2013. I don't question your memory. I'm looking at the rules of the legislature, and I just don't see that in there.
Well, and I understand that.
You have a temporary chair.
I had a different interpretation, and Jonathan had a different interpretation. So I'm going to defer to the county attorney, if that's okay with Jonathan. I don't know.
Well, what I heard Jonathan say was that's the way we've done it before, and that is one way that he interprets it, and it could be interpreted a different way. That's what I heard him say. The temporary chair is going to run the meeting and conduct all the rest of the business. There's nothing in the rules that says that piece of business can't be run by the temporary chair. It does not say that.
No, I understand what you're saying, but I also understand the argument why not to have it right now. And like I said, that isn't exactly what Jonathan said. I mean, if you would like to summarize again, Jonathan.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, someone would make a motion to lay business on the table, and what they've done in the past, to conduct the rest of the business and then bring it back to the election of the elections of the chair and the vice chair. At the end of the meeting was moved to take it off the table and do that. I mean, I suppose one could interpret the rule and say, well, let's only lay on the table the vote of the chair and not the vice chair. It could be interpreted that way, but it both changes the fact that now there will not be the chair involved in running the election of the vice chair, as well as the fact that the vote for the chair could affect the vote of the vice chair. So it seems the more sensible way to do it to me is to put them both off.
I agree. However, let me take what everybody's going to say, and then I'm going to take motions. So,
I had my hand up.
Martha.
I think that the language is clear, but regardless of, I'm not an attorney. You're not an attorney. I do think, as colleagues, I think we should honor the fact that if somebody loses the chair election, they might want to consider running for vice chair. And I think that is whatever the letter of the law that might not have contemplated this in the past, I think that's the decent thing to do, is to let this go forward as we did in 2013. In 2013, it took two whole weeks where Frank Proto was temporary chair, and the world went on. I think we should honor that tradition and that respect for each other so that somebody has the opportunity to run for vice chair if they lose the first election.
Okay, so I'm Anna and Sean. I didn't know which was first. So.
I was just going to ask Geo to spend this year going through the rules of the legislature to make more of these things more clear. And then I was going to also request that we take a vote on this.
No, I understand what you're saying. Yes, Sean.
That was my thought, too, is as vote if we want to move forward with the vice chair or not.
So I'm going to – is that a motion?
Yes.
I mean, okay. So we have a motion on the table to proceed ahead with – the vote on the vice chair of the legislature.
I think there was a motion to lay the chair vote on the table, and I'm not sure it was seconded, but it should be withdrawn if not.
Okay. So the motion on the floor right now is to lay the election of the chairperson on the table and the vice chair.
No, that is not the motion I made. I was the mover.
You were the mover?
Yes.
Restate your motion.
Sure. I'm moving that we lay on the table the election of the chair until after the regular business of the meeting has been completed.
Great. Do I have a second? Sean. All those in favor of that?
Question?
Yes.
Actually, I want to make an amendment. I want to move that to say we're laying on the table the election of chair and vice chair until the end of the rest of the business for the evening.
I assume that's not friendly to you. So we're going to vote now on the amendment.
Is there a second to that?
Do we have a second to the amendment? Glenn. Okay, so the motion on the table is, or the motion on the floor is, we will table the election of the chairperson and the vice chairperson, because that's the amendment to the motion. Yes.
The amendment has to be voted on.
Right, so that's what we're voting
on.
Is
so the amendment. We're just voting on the amendment, not the...
Correct. So all those in favor of the amendment, it would basically, we would table both elections, both the chairperson and the vice chairperson. All those in favor of tabling both of the elections to the end of this meeting. All those, please raise your hands if you say yes. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. All those opposed. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. So the vote is 8-6.
That's just the
amendment. That was the amendment.
Amendment.
Right. So now we're going to vote on that motion.
And now the main motion
main
is
motion
the two.
Is amended?
Is amended.
Right. The main motion is to table the election of both the chair and the vice chair till the end of this meeting. Can I see a show of hands of all those in favor of that motion? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. All those opposed? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. So the vote is 8-6. That passes. We will get to that business at the end of the meeting. Thank you very much. All right. Do we have any presentations of proclamations, petitions, communications, and notices?
Do we have any of those?
We're good. It's not an executive session. We are obviously tabling the elections to the end of the meeting. Reordering of business. Does anybody have any requests on reordering of the business? No. And special orders of the day, I don't see any. Privilege of the floor. Does any from the public like to speak on privilege of the floor? Really? Oh, he's an elected official now. We are now moving on to elected officials. Do we have any elected officials who would like to speak on privilege of the floor? George McGonigal, how are you?
Good evening. Interesting meeting. Got a few things to share with you. The city is about to vote tomorrow night on spending a lot of money. The biggest item is improvements to the Ithaca area wastewater treatment plant. The grit system is old and worn out, and it wears everything else out on the treatment plant, so we're about to spend some large money on an improved system that will make everything last longer and work better. We're about to finally purchase the street lights in the city from NYSEG. This has been a negotiation that's taken a long time, but now we'll actually be able to replace bulbs that are out, something that NYSEG had trouble doing. And we're going to convert to LED lights and save money in the long run. So that's a good thing. We're about to commence on a major transportation plan, assuming we vote to fund it. There's one thing I'd like to ask your help with, and that is to petition the state to to modify some of their new requirements for summer day camps. We're in danger, not just in the city, but throughout the county, of losing funding for at least 80 families to go to summer camp at the Youth Bureau and at GIAC. A lot of the new requirements that the state is asking us to comply with, we already comply with through the county health department. But the fact that they're asking for additional trainings and fingerprinting and all kinds of stuff is going to just make it more difficult for not only the city but for the various towns to actually have funding for families that are low income. Leslin can help fill you in on the details, and I can too. I have a stock letter that Liz Coleman from the Youth Bureau put together, and I'm going to start with Barbara Lifton and Tom O'Mara, but there's probably other heads of departments in the state that I don't know about yet that we're going to lobby to see if we can make things better for our children in our community. So I'll ask for your help doing that.
I think you can talk.
Thanks, Mike. George, thank you, George. This fingerprinting issue came up, and I'm trying to remember what the meeting was, and I'm looking at Jason.
Health and Human Services meeting.
Where, like, I guess it was about daycare and...
Jude came up. Jude. Okay.
Okay, so the question is, it seemed like every individual daycare doesn't need to invent their own system or have their own database for fingerprinting, and we were going to try to work on that.
County, I know. Yeah, there was an issue about Cortland County doing it, but there's a new fingerprint system that opened up in the mall.
Yeah.
There's a company in Cortland County, not Cortland County themselves.
Right. There's a company in Cortland County. The company is now opened up in Ithaca Mall for the
fingerprinting background check.
This issue is also more complicated because there's also other issues involved. It's
quite complicated because, number one, a lot of the people who are hired for summer programs are temporary workers, even though they may come back the next year. And there's requirements that if you're not employed for, I don't know, 180 days, then you have to go through all these things again. The time it takes to check through all these requirements could be longer than between the time that a person's hired and the time that the summer camp begins. It just throws all these monkey wrenches in the middle of it.
Any other questions for George? I do, but Henry.
Can you talk about this transportation study? This is different than the parking study?
Yes, it's expanded to include transportation throughout the city, as well as parking will be a part of this study, but it's a much broader goal.
Okay, will the study take longer, I assume, then?
I wouldn't doubt it. I don't know how long it's scheduled to take, but yes. And this goes somewhat along with the fact that the city is, we just lost our parking director, and we're going to change that position to director of transportation, and parking will be a part of that person's responsibility. So it's a bigger job, basically.
Okay. Also, do you know, in terms of the wastewater treatment system, is there anything going on with checking? Because I got an email today from a constituent that was online
talked about the effect of ADUs on wastewater. Is there anything going, anybody talking about that effect?
Well, I saw that email as well, and I think that's a valid concern. I don't think that the people that operate the wastewater treatment plant have chimed in on that, and I don't think Eric Whitney's chimed in on that, but it would be a good question to ask, certainly.
I have Martha, then Rich.
George, let us know what we can do on the child care issue. We do go to NYSAC next at the end of this month, and if there's some stuff we can do on that. So if there's anything written up, you know, share that.
I will do that, and I believe I can contact you all through the county email. I'm not real smooth at that yet.
We probably know where to find the director of GIAC, so she can share it with us.
Right.
Rich?
George, thanks for the update, and thank you for coming and talking to us here in 2020. That's really good news about the streetlights. I was wondering, do you have a closing date and any more information on that?
I do not have a definite date, but it's coming soon. And the other thing I forgot about was we're finally going to start with the dredging. I can't remember if Cascadilla or Fall Creek goes first. I think it's Cascadilla. But that's going to start this spring.
Just to add, I know DSS and Youth Services is working on the summer camp issue a little bit, so we can touch base with them and connect either with you, George, and or Dan Kogan, just to make sure.
I'm sure
they're probably already communicating with the Youth Bureau, but we can follow up with them.
Yep.
We can follow up on them, make sure.
I have Henry, and then I have Anna.
Yeah, I know that Liz, because I'm on the ISCA Youth Bureau board, and I know Liz was talking to Barbara Lifton. Do you know whether anything has gone on with those conversations?
I think their conversations are ongoing. I've spoken with Barbara Lifton myself, and actually Barbara suggested this letter-writing campaign, local officials.
Okay.
So,
Anna?
Thank you, Henry. That was my first question. I totally share that one. Finding how we can support this is definitely helpful. The other question I had, I understood that it was Cascadilla, and part of that was because the anything that is dredged can be placed in the area where City Harbor will be for de-wetting for a couple months. That was supposed to start right in February of this year. My question is, that is what I understood, so I guess I wanted to confirm that. And the other question is, I had also heard that dredging can't happen through the full length of Cascadilla because there is some issues with DEC and being able to enter into the creek beds with large tractors. Is that... And I ask only because of the icing issue that we have had in Fall Creek.
So are you talking about Cascadilla or Fall Creek?
Well, both of them affect people in the Fall Creek district.
I understand that.
So, yes, I'm talking about both of them. But in this case, I was talking about Cascadilla.
I haven't heard of any bans on driving equipment into the creek. Although I've heard about that on Six Mile Creek, interestingly enough. I do believe they're going to start with some of the spoils at the old Johnson Boatyard. The primary site for the spoils that are dredged out is going to be in the city's Southwest Park, and they're going to actually build a building to cover them. And that's going to start this spring as well. I think the start time is somewhat flexible, February, March.
Do I have any more questions for George? Because I have a question for George. George, last time I took a tour of the wastewater treatment plant, it was probably 5 years ago. If you haven't done that, it's really kind of neat because the whole gas system and things like that. It was only getting about 50% of the waste that it could actually handle. I mean, it could handle 50% more. And now we're doing this upgrade. I'm kind of wondering, will that mean you can handle even more? And has it been planned out where it's, because you said it's a lot of money. To me, a lot of money is like, wow, okay, what's going on there? And have you planned for all that growth that's going to happen kind of down on the waterfront? And all the growth that's kind of happened in the city, are you getting more, let's call it product, that you then have to process? I guess I'm just curious as to where we are with all that.
So was that a straight line for a joke?
Maybe. Right, if you can't answer all that, we can get together later. And
I mean, there's going to be more product, yeah. But it's going to be handled better because it won't have to be screened as often because it'll be screened better to begin with. So larger particulates won't hit the important parts of the system and it won't wear them out as quickly. As far as total volume of how much the system can handle, I bet it's over 50% now, but I don't think it's...
Well, wasn't that it couldn't handle it. It could handle much more. It was only... You know, it was actually overbuilt almost in anticipation, it seemed. So.
Yeah, I don't think anybody's saying it's overbuilt now.
No, I mean.
And of course, it's primarily owned by the city, but it's also Dryden and Cayuga Heights have a piece of it as well.
That's why I asked. Lansing has partnered with Cayuga Heights, and anything you guys have benefits us as well. So, thank you very much, George. Any other questions? All right. Thank you, George.
Thank you.
I see other municipal members here. Mr. Lynch, would you like to say anything? Or?
Mr. Lynch?
Isn't he back there? Yeah.
Oh, Mr. Lynch. Do you want to speak as a municipal official?
Just here observing.
Okay.
Congratulations on being sworn in.
All right, well, moving on then from municipal officials, county legislatures. Would anybody like to speak on the privilege of the floor? Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Temporary Chair.
No problem, Amanda.
You look very good up there.
I dressed for the occasion.
I just wanted to, maybe Mike's going to say this in his report about the census, but just for people, anybody who's listening, the lots of folks out there, we need more people to do the census jobs, and they're good paying. Lots and lots. We need lots more people to apply. So if you want to spread the word, share on your social media. Tompkins County is apparently falling seriously behind. So we need to get more folks out there. And the second thing I wanted to say was just to remind everyone here that, and anyone who's interested to come to our next meeting on January 21st, we're going to have all but one of our Tompkins County Poet Laureates will be here. We will have a small reception for them ahead of time. The plaque that we had ordered is up on the wall over there, and we'll have a short reading by our current Poet Laureate. So I hope everyone will be able to attend. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Yes, Deborah Dawson.
Thank you, Mr. Sigler. I'm sure that you've all seen the news stories about what's happening in Australia. If you see the overlays of the map, some of those fires, one of those fires is the size of the state of Ohio. I just can't even begin to imagine how you fight a thing like that. I can't imagine what the people of Australia are having to go through. And I see that a billion animals, the estimate is now that a billion animals have died in those fires, and it breaks my heart. So if, like me, you're looking for a way to help, the Australian Red Cross is the best avenue for making donations internationally to our fellow human beings in Australia, and I would invite you to do that. Thank you.
Thank you, Deborah. Yes, Michael.
There's been a lot in the news lately about people being angry with one another, hate crimes, and we don't like that. That's something that is not American. It is not human. When we hear what's been happening in our own state with respect to folks of the Jewish faith, not only am I disappointed with our residents and citizens of New York, but I'm angry at them, and I don't like that. We had in Muncie a simply terrible anti-Semitic attack on a Jewish group that was celebrating a holiday. What's driving this? It starts across the nation at the top. It's 4 or 5 years or more of anti-immigrants, anti-people who are different than us, anti-racist things that go on, sometimes sub rosa under the breath. We don't need that. We don't need that anywhere. Can it happen in Tompkins County? I'd like to say no, but I worry about it. We need to stand in solidarity with all of the minority groups, religious groups, immigrant groups, to say it doesn't happen here and it shouldn't happen in America. Thanks.
Martha.
On a lighter note, I wanted to make sure people knew about the Chamber of Commerce's business after hours tomorrow evening at the airport, 5 to 7. Public is invited. I think it's $10 a ticket. There'll be reception, food by Ithaca Coffee Company. And you don't have to buy a plane ticket this time to see the new part of the terminal. My call is figuring out a way. I guess the FAA says that if you take 5 people at a time and go through security and the this and that, he can bring people, the general public, into the new part of the terminal. There is, I think, a plane taking off in the middle of that, so there might be some wrinkles, but the public is invited, and it's a nice chance to see the new building.
Yes.
Thank you. I just wanted to follow up on what Martha said about the business after hours at the airport tomorrow, and I talked to Mike Hall, the airport director, today about that and about the fee, and he said that if you contacted him, he could waive the fee. They have 20, they get 20 free attendees, if the airport does, so if money is an issue for you. Thank you.
Thank you, Annie. I have Leslyn and Rich.
I don't know. Who's invited to business after hours? Is it just the business community? I'm asking a legitimate question, or is it a whole community?
I think the chamber, the chamber has like 800 members, and that includes like single person consultant businesses. The county is a member, so forever I get their emails. So I don't know how broadly those emails go out, but I don't know if you literally have to be a chamber member or if the public can go in. So I do know it's a big number, even if it's just chamber members.
Okay. So I was just thinking of what Annie said, and if there are people out there who want to go, are they allowed to? Is it only business members?
I can answer all these questions, unless Annie wants to.
I was a chamber member before, and so I don't know what their pricing structure is now, but it used to be there was $10 for non-members and $5 for members. So I don't know if it's going to be $10 or $5, but it was always that anybody could go to that.
All right.
And Mike specifically invited the legislature.
Yes.
Well, my other thing is I wanted to invite all of you before we meet again. It will be Saturday, January 18th, and it's our annual Martin Luther King Jr. Community Breakfast at GIAC. You're all invited. 9. Breakfast begins at 9 a.m. The program usually kicks off around 9:30, between 9:30 and 9:45. So you're all invited. You're also invited to come volunteer, help serve breakfast, help clean up, help set up, any one of those things, mingle, be a greeter, a runner, any number of things. So Saturday the 18th, 9 a.m., the annual Martin Luther King Jr. Community Breakfast at GIAC. It's at BJM, but it's a GIAC event. Thank you.
Thank you, Leslie. Feel better, too.
Yeah.
Rich.
Thank you, Mike, and I think you're doing a great job as our chair tonight so far.
I'm holding it together with a string there.
I wanted to talk for a moment about a government that is struggling to determine its leadership and trying to make a decision as to what direction to go. And I'm not talking about us. We are very fortunate here in Tompkins County in that we have a financially stable and strong government with really dedicated employees. By all indications, we operate with very, very low level of corruption, if any. I think we're an honest, good, dedicated group of people here, and we should be very thankful for that. Where I would like to talk about is a city that is a great American city and is just crying out in trouble, which is the city of Baltimore. If you can think of a municipal problem, they have it. And the need for Baltimore, you know, and Detroit, and you start naming all the great American cities that are in similar situations to turn around and to find a better direction. It really comes from leadership. And so I'm happy to brag on my sister, Mary Miller, a product of Ithaca High School, Cornell University, University of North Carolina, where she got a degree in city and regional planning. She is a product of our local community, and she's done very well in life. She worked for 20-some years at T. Rowe Price in municipal finance. She then moved to the Obama administration in 2009 and was the first woman undersecretary for domestic finance and worked through some horrendous issues for our country and did it ably, frankly, if I can say so myself. And she is determined to run for mayor of Baltimore. She has announced her candidacy at 5 o'clock today, and I think she would be a tremendous mayor. If you want the status quo, there's lots of choices. She would bring really different and exciting change to the city of Baltimore, and I commend her for putting her hat in the ring and trying. You know, it's always hard to put your name in nomination and take a go at it, and she's thought long and hard on whether she could make a run at it and make a difference, and she's given it a try. And in the name of shameless promotion, I'll say electmarymiller.com. There's a really nice video on there and some bio. And anyway, I will be providing updates occasionally. The primary is in April.
Thank you very much. Martha.
Well, as a native of Baltimore, that sounds great to me. I know they have had a lot of trouble. And then I, looking at my calendar about the BJM breakfast, I'm like, oh, right, those are the Women's March days. There's a Women's March on Saturday the 18th and Sunday the 19th. The Women's March in Seneca Falls is the Saturday march. It starts at 12:30. And on Sunday, there's a march in Elmira, and as well as a march in Washington, D.C. The Elmira March is at 1 o'clock, and those are both. So we can, like, really have a big weekend of everybody getting together and then go to marymiller.com. I love, you know, having a name like that. That's really nice. Not likely to be spelled wrong. All right. Thank you very much.
Does anyone have anything else to say? Okay, I'm just going to I'll say something real quickly. It occurred to me I really wish everybody a Happy New Year. You know, we're into a brand new year. Last year I thought was pretty good. You know, we got a new court judge. We got, you know, that garbage burning facility did not open up on the lake there, thanks to a lot of people. And I thought the airport was really a success for us. So, again, Happy New Year. I hope everybody had nice holidays. And I will just interject one thing. I wrote an article over the weekend about people kind of reaching out to other people, because that's a great thing to do during the holiday season. If you haven't seen somebody, you know, reach. And I went to my father's 80th birthday party on Sunday. And there was a man there, and he spoke out about my father and said very nice things about him. And he said that that friendship came to him very late in life, like 5 years ago or with like a decade ago, right? So he was 70 when this friendship emerged. And I found that to be a very poignant statement that, you know, as we grow older, I really believe that loneliness in this country is a huge problem, something that we do not address, you know, well, especially with the decrease of membership in churches and service organizations. Every single service organization I know of is looking for people. So even when we're looking for people to run for political office, it seems, it's difficult to find people sometimes. And I just want to reiterate that for the new year. I mean, that's certainly something that is my resolution. Is just to reach out to more people if you can. Because otherwise, a lot of people are lonely and a lot of people are alone. And if we could do that as a community, I mean, I really see that as how you build community. So, again, Happy New Year.
Thank you. You're here, Mike. Thank you.
All right. We're going to move on to number 7, special topical presentations and legislative discussion. Do we have a presentation? Should we put somebody on the spot over there? Good. All right. Chair's report and chair's appointment. Well, I think I just gave my report. But, you know, I don't see this whole debate. I'll give a quick report. We obviously just had a vote on who will be chair of the legislature. I do not see this as the negative that other people see this as. I believe this is a healthy debate, and this is what's kind of supposed to happen in a democracy. And at the end of the day, someone's going to be the chair, someone's not. And yet everyone will have the responsibility of being a county legislature just like they had before. And you know what? You don't get your vote every time, right? You win, you lose, you move on. And if we can focus on certain things, you know, I really believe, like last year, we were successful because we picked like 3 things to focus on. And guess what? All 3 of those things we got. And for me, I focused on getting health care for my rural library. I wanted to get all the rural libraries. I couldn't. I could only get mine because they're a taxing authority. But if you don't think I'm now not looking at all the other things that might be taxing authorities and could come underneath our umbrella, you would be wrong. And, you know, so that was another success, and that was really one of the best things I've probably done in this legislative seat, was not me offering health care, but at least giving them access to a health care system that they didn't have access to before. So I really believe that if we really pick real specific things and we speak as a group and we're unified in what we're talking about to the state and to the federal government, we can pretty much accomplish what we want, because we really are a well-run county. I mean, I'm looking around at some of the other counties, and they're struggling, and I don't know how they're going to dig their way out. Some of their fiscal situations are not good, and they go through county administrators like. Anyway, that's it for my report. I'm going to move on to the reports for the county administrator. Jason, take it away.
Thank you for that inspiring talk, Mike. Happy New Year, everyone. Happy to say that last Friday we closed on the North Tioga Street property, so we are the official owner of it. Congratulations. We moved forward with the recommendations that came from the downtown facility committee, communicated out to the staff, have contacted the union with a draft memorandum of understanding for temporary use of the parking, and we'll begin to probably Monday announce or allow to start to have employees park in the parking lot. We'll monitor it. We'll be back in front of that committee in about 2 months to see if there's additional capacity and how we go about doing that. So we'll also evaluate the condition of the parking lot, see how well we can get through the winter. If we have to do any patchwork, we'll do it. And we'll also monitor the lighting situation. If we don't have to, we'll stay away from doing lighting, but if needed, we'll put something up. So just to let you know about that. On a side note, before the holiday, there was an announcement that the Chamber of Commerce Foundation received two grants equaling about $5 million for the support of a conference center downtown as part of the Green Street development. Some of the staff and I have been loosely part of the conversations up until that point, and I did put a pretty extensive update out to the legislature with the last update over the weekend, but as a recap of that, essentially this conference center is pitched as part of the development with the Green Street housing development downtown, roughly about a 48,000, 50,000 square foot conference center. The Downtown Ithaca Alliance and the Chamber had done a phase one and phase two study over the past 3 or 4 years, basically a feasibility study talking about the justification of the housing, of the conference center, which seems to be an available market for a conference center. To date, the conversations I've had with the Downtown Ithaca Alliance, the City of Ithaca's Planning Department, as well as the IURA surrounding and the Chamber involved in those conversations, have been involving what does the performer or the business plan look like, what is the ownership structure that they're looking at, considering, and how are they financing it. To date, those answers have not been completely come to. They're still looking at an ownership model. Financing will probably dictate or partner with ownership as to who is the rightful owner, be the lender, or they'll be the lendee of financing to support the project, and what other public financing mechanism outside of grants would be used to finance the conference center. At the initial discussion, when this came up several months ago, it was a tourism improvement district, and I think I periodically put out updates to the legislature about this kind of this discussion. It's really picked up since the grant came about. The tourism improvement district, Jonathan and I were part of a discussion about was there the ability to do a special district countywide, which we came to the conclusion it was not, based on certain county law that provides certain only specific types of special districts in the county. And a tourism improvement district, which would put an additional percentage tax or fee on room occupancies, was not one of them. And from there, we spoke with the planning group about this is really not a county special district that can be created, so the conversation is then shifted to a city special district, a tourism improvement district encompassing parts of the city and some of the hotels in the city. That has been right now is the primary financing mechanism that is being looked at to support the construction, marketing and promotion, and some of the operations of the conference center. We have weekly meetings or weekly check-in calls set up now just to see progress as those partners continue to evaluate those different options. One thing that has come up that we've started to look at is the possibility of the county asking for an additional 6% on the occupancy tax. Currently, there's a 5% occupancy tax countywide. The county legislature has the option to ask for a 6% or request a home rule legislation to go to the state, increasing that percentage. There are a few counties in the state that have more than 5, and I believe Onondaga County is actually considering 7 right now. So that has been something that has been discussed that we're aware of and that we're, part of the discussion. There's not been any conclusion that this is a request from the DIA or the city or the chamber or the owner of the potential owner of the conference center that this is something that would like to be sought. But if so, it would have to come through this body and you'd have to entertain it. It would require a home rule request to the state, and the state legislature would ultimately have to agree to it as well. It's a very loose and broad project right now. but their timeline is somewhat close in terms of the beginning of February. They're looking to have some type of plan in place or go, no-go consensus with the developer that this is a potential option of the development. Otherwise, the developer may choose or have to make a decision as to, rather than do the conference center, do additional affordable housing units as part of the larger project. So it's something that will be moving pretty quickly over the next few weeks. Myself, Katie, and Nick from the planning department have been primarily part of the conversations. I've offered a lot of different perspectives just because of my involvement with business improvement districts in the past, and just given some different perspectives on how different financing models could work or not work. There's a lot of interesting challenges that come with the project, particularly if it becomes municipally involved, such as the city or the DIA, and how that impacts each other, how it impacts constitutional debt limits, how it impacts constitutional tax limits, not necessarily for us in the county, but what it may do for the different jurisdictions if they participate in different ways. So it's a kind of an ever-evolving project right now that has picked up a lot of speed just because of the grants that have been awarded as of mid-December. I will add one last thing, is the city did submit an application to the URI, which is the Upstate Revitalization Initiative, I think. It's through the Finger Lakes Regional Council. Bless you. And there has been additional requests of funding to support the conference center as well as some of the adjacent parking lots. As you know, the parking lot structure has a rather odd ownership structure to it, and there's been some requests for funding to support the conference center and the parking lots or parking garage renovations or reconstruction as well. So that's also in play as a potential offset of cost of the project. So nothing specific to report, just that we're engaged in the conversation. I believe the 21st, members of the DIA, the chamber, and the city will be here to present to the legislature the most up-to-date information. I think they may be scheduled also to go to the Housing Economic Development Committee and maybe back again in the first meeting in February to see what transpires. So I can answer some questions about it, but that was a pretty vague, broad overview because that's pretty much what we have in terms of information that's available.
I have questions from Henry and then Mike.
Jason and Jonathan, I know that other counties, other cities in New York were also trying to do the TID. Do we know whether or not any of those other counties through Civitas would be trying to get authorization to do a TID countywide?
I can tell you that to date there are no tourism improvement districts that are established at a county or a city level in New York State. Some have entertained it.
Right.
But nothing has ever been brought forward or attempted to be adopted. So it's been more discussion than anything with two or three other counties that have discussed it.
Okay.
Michael Lane?
Is that right? Yeah, there are none. There are none, yeah.
Jason, there's been articles about this in the media and other things, and they keep saying they may come to the county for a backstop.
Sure.
Now, to me, a backstop means a guarantee of funding. Is that your understanding, and is that still being talked about, where they would want us to be the deep pocket?
There has been the issue of backstop has come up, which essentially is what you're suggesting is a guarantee or an insurance that certain revenue would come through. This has also been partnered with a city backstop and DIA backstop discussion. It really can't be discussed or really understood until the financing model is put together. And that's been my discussion with them is, you know, what is the ask here? And the only way to understand what the ask is, if there is one, is what is the financing model that is to support the borrow to construct the facility? And if so, then what type of risks or opportunities come with that financing model, and then what type of supports may or may not be needed. So it's been talked about in a vague sense, other than more than just a topic of discussion, but it really can't be, there's nothing tangible to sink your teeth into because there's no financing mechanism or financing model to discuss with it.
But shouldn't the guarantee be from the city and not from the county?
This has been discussed with all three of those, the city, the DIA, and the county, yes. There has been no order of precedent, no order of magnitude, no percentage of greater or less than the other than some type of backstopping by some other entity, such as a municipality or a taxing authority, may be needed depending on the financing model. That's the extent that I've had the conversations.
Thank you.
Martha Robertson.
And I understand that there are conversations with the hotels, too, that I ran into Jennifer Tavares yesterday, and she said that there are a lot of different models, and they're having their discussions. So I think the fact that the IURA was able to move to February 6th is a help as these things get sorted out. So you've got your meeting, a phone conference tomorrow.
Yes.
I think one of the questions was, did the Vecino as a housing developer, do they have to have a firm number when they apply for tax credits for the affordable housing? Do they have to have a firm number of housing units? Is that like the driver of a deadline? And it'd be good to know if that's true.
That's one of the questions I've asked is, part of what's driving this is Vecino has a deadline to submit an application for funding for affordable housing. Do they need to identify the set number? Can it be a larger number and can be settled at a lower, depending if this project pans out or not? So that's a question I've asked, and maybe we might be able to get some answers tomorrow or within the next few weeks about that.
Or maybe the other way, apply for the lower number, and if they can also do that, maybe they can adjust it up. Okay.
That's a good question.
Thank you.
So I actually have a question. Not everybody reads the Ithaca Voice, and I'm springing this on you, so you may
not
know
about it. That's all right. I haven't read it either.
Cornell is giving $100,000 to the library,
Allegedly, yes.
Okay.
I did hear that, yeah.
I didn't know if you knew anything about it.
I did, yes.
No details.
I have no more details other than I believe they're giving the library $100,000.
Okay. It's in the Ithaca Voice, apparently. Yes. I didn't get to read it.
I will say on that note, Mike, there was an invite. There was an invite to a press conference. I got it. It went to a legislature email that had the wrong email address, so I don't think you've got it all. I didn't. You did get it? Okay. I didn't identify that earlier. So we just found that out today, I think, after the event. When they put county, the legislature at, there was whoever sent the email, I think, made a mistake in the address, so it didn't go, I didn't catch it. So you were invited to the press conference.
I was out of town, but I just didn't know if you knew.
You didn't get it. I'm sorry.
Yes.
I'd just like to make sure somebody says it while we're having this discussion, that if a convention center dropped from the sky and started operating, there would be real benefit to the county, that it would be located in the city and certainly provide benefit to the city, but there would be tremendous economic activity generated as a result, and we would see it in room tax, and we would see it in sales tax, and all the restaurants and hotels and other businesses that are in our county would do better. So I don't think we should look at this as something where we categorically say we would not even entertain some sort of financial participation. It must be proportional to the benefit, obviously, and from what I've looked at this proposal, it's going to be a fairly complicated financial model, and there'll be much to argue about. But I hope we have the argument that we really look at it, because this is a big decision for our community. Thank you.
Thank you, Rich. Anna Kellis, I saw your hand.
Yeah, I just wanted to reiterate publicly that I've asked Gary to come and speak at our next legislative meeting. As Jason said, the decisions are being made really quickly, and some of them in the next couple weeks, and it would probably be best if we heard sooner rather than later what the thoughts are and could potentially give feedback and input. So some of these questions certainly can be asked of Gary at that time. With respect to the county influence or the county impact, I've asked him to share some thoughts that they have and some of their assessment on that. I know some of the original things that they have identified, obviously. One is the room tax, and they do expect a significant increase in room occupancy as a result, and obviously that goes directly to tourism dollars. And that is a countywide impact. And the second one that he'll talk about in greater detail will be the number of jobs that they expect to be full-time employed at the facility. So worth hearing from him and maybe saving up some questions for him.
Okay. Everybody good? Jason, thank you very much.
Thank you.
We move on to Jonathan Wood.
I have no report.
All right, thank you, Jonathan. Finance Director.
Thank you, Mike. Happy New Year to all on this first Tuesday in 2020. In your red folders, you'll see a November sales tax report. We have another record-breaking month to bring you the facts, figures tonight. On your sales tax distribution summary, in your red folder, you can see that the distributions for November was up 6.4% just for the month of November, comparing to last year. Moving over to the year-to-date columns, you can see that at the end of November, the year-to-date tax distributions for the county's portion totaled $34,999,298, and that compares to $33,571,009 in 2018. This represents an increase of $1,428,289 year over year, or an increase of 4.25%. We only need to be at 91% or 92% of budget. You can see at the bottom of this spreadsheet, we are at 96.5% or 96.3%, depending on which method of calculation that we use. So, of course, 96.5% is a lot better than 91 or 92%. So we're showing that for 11/12 of the exceeding budget. I have one other item, but I'll take any questions you might have about sales tax. Okay. The other thing I wanted to bring to you tonight, although I don't have a report to hand out, I wanted to bring you a little information on the contingency fund, as we're still doing budget adjustments at the end of the year. Departments are still encouraged and required to bring budget transfers and budget adjustments, some of which you might still see in February, that come from the contingency fund. Tonight's agenda has a number of items that affect the contingency fund. I believe there's three out of the four, and I just wanted to give you the numbers of where we were at on that contingency fund. Currently, we still have a balance of $605,000 in our contingency fund. Tonight's budget adjustments that take from contingency would bring that down to about $433,000. So we still have a fairly healthy contingency fund as we come close to closing fiscal year 2019.
Yes, Deborah Dawson.
Well, I have a question about contingency fund, because I see all the time in some of the resolutions that we pass that we're moving stuff out of contingent to pay for these various things. Then how, I mean, do we have some regular mechanism for replenishing money in contingency, or is it just what we specifically put in contingency during the budget process?
Of course, it is a line item budget, as you passed your adopted budget, that Jason incorporates a number. Usually it's about $1 million, $900,000, somewhere around that, that you as a legislature appropriate every year is part and parcel of your adopted budget. From that, we make these subtractions or these deductions from contingency all through the year. Only if we run out would we come back to you and say, we need an additional appropriation. That's probably not going to happen this year. It hasn't happened for the last couple of years. I do remember when it has happened, but there are other ways that you can make appropriations even when contingency reaches zero. You could make an appropriation directly out of general fund reserves. kind of bypassing the contingency fund.
But we don't ever just say, oh, you know, we're going to put $500,000 in contingency. When we put money in contingent, it's always earmarked for possible use.
It's so the contingency budget is budget. It's a line item that you budget for every year. So basically, every year you say we have $900,000 for unanticipated expenses.
Oh, okay. So we do just
you budget for it every year. So in this case, we'll have about $400-$450 left this year, which means essentially all the contingency budget is on the expense side of budgets. It's a placeholder of unanticipated. So when you do these transfers, you're actually moving it from one expense line to another on the expense side of the budget.
Okay.
If you don't expend or utilize all your contingency every year, which I wouldn't encourage that you do, that then would roll into usually unassigned fund balance.
Right.
So it helps build your fund balance.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
Any other questions for Rick? Okay. Thank you very much, Rick. Moving on to report from other county staff. I do see Barbara over there. I think I know why you're here. And Marcia, that's the best Jeffrey Dunn suit I've ever seen. So that's really fantastic. So resolutions added and to withdraw from the agenda. Is anybody looking through your packets? Do you see anything to withdraw from the agenda? No. Nobody's given you anything? All right. Moving on. Consent agenda. According to the consent agenda, the first on the consent agenda is resolution number A, approve a supplemental agreement with Barton and Ludice, DPC, for design and construction services for South Street Extension Slope Stabilization Project, Town of Ulysses. Resolution number B, authorizing supplemental agreement number 19 with CNS Companies for Environmental Services and number 20 for Program Management Services at the Ithaca Regional Airport, soon to be the International Airport. Government Operations Committee, resolution number C, delegation of authority to authorize certain tax refunds and credits of $2,500 and under. Planning, Energy, and Environmental Quality Committee, resolution
off.
Number D, that is off. Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee, resolution number E, delegation of authority to authorize certain tax and solid waste fee refunds under $500. And that is the consent agenda.
And appointments.
We also have the advisory board appointments, Budget and Capital Committee. We have Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee, Henry Granison, and Anna and Ann Corman. Sorry, Annie Corman, both legislators to the Workforce and Diversion and Inclusion Committee. Advisory Board and Indigent Representation, Diane Bruns and Deborah Dietrich. Planning, Energy, and Environmental Quality, Agriculture, and Farmland Protection Board, Darren Buck, Paul Geer, and France. Environmental Management Council, we have Thomas Shelley. He will be the chair for 2020. So we are going to include those in. Do I see a motion? Oh, I'm sorry, Deborah.
Well, I noticed that one of the nominations for the Ag and Farmland Protection Board was not a resident of Tompkins County. Is that okay for that particular board?
That is a fine question. Topics on yourselves. Do you know which person it is, Deb?
It's Paul Geyer. He's one of our Soil and Water District employees. I mean, he'd be a great addition to the board, but I just didn't know.
What are we discussing?
Martha's got her hand up. She might know the answer.
I'm too far away. It's like...
Just speak up, Martha. I do it all.
Mike, it looks like it says name and location of business. It looks like he works at the Soil and Water District, right?
Right. So does that make it okay?
If it's a designated seat for some reason, as a function of somebody's employment, that they want somebody who is who's representing a particular business or whatever or agency, that we let that go through. And by the way, this went through your committee, right? This is your committee.
It is a designated seat, and it was recommended.
Okay. Well, I just...
Okay.
All right. So if it's a designated seat and he was recommended, I think we can proceed with that if that's okay with everybody. Well, we're going to vote on it in a second. Do I have a motion to put all that on the Deborah Dawson? Second, Leslin. All those in favor of the consent agenda and the appointments? That is unanimous. Thank you very much. Moving on.
Mike, if I can suggest that you take Resolution D so that Barb can leave.
That sounds like a good plan. So Resolution D, resolution to limit the purchase of single-use plastic items in Tompkins County. And I believe there is something in the red packet which extends that to polystyrene.
Yes.
Why don't we move the one in the packet first? Is there a number on that? Because I left my packet on my desk.
The number on the agenda is...
Well, the agenda I have, it's the. Does the packet have a different number?
No, it's still 9084.
Okay. Well, here.
That's what was in the packet.
Yeah, let me see.
So this one should be moved.
That one should be moved. So we have to move the first one. Resolution to limit purchase of single-use plastic items in Tompkins County government. Do I see Deborah Dawson?
I'll move that.
And a second? Great. Okay.
And then I'll move the amended version in the...
Okay, great. Well, let's. So Amanda was the second on that.
Oh, sorry.
And then... So now you would move it as an amendment, right?
As amended, yes.
And you've moved it, so that's friendly.
Yes.
Second, it's friendly? I figured as much. Okay, great. So the new one is the resolution to limit the purchase of single-use plastic and expanded polystyrene foam items in Tompkins County government. And Deborah, if you'd like to speak on that, that'd be great.
Well, I saw a very interesting video recently about that little three-arrow recycling symbol that we are also used to. I think in a lot of ways we've forgotten that each arrow has a meaning, and it's reduce, reuse, and recycle. We've become so dependent on recycling, and now we're having to pay the piper because we don't necessarily have markets, unlimited markets for our recycled materials. So I think it's incumbent upon us all to start reducing, and a great way to start reducing is to stop buying these disposable single-use items. And this is, again, an area in which the county can set an example for everyone else. So that's the purpose of this motion.
Does anybody else would like to speak on this issue? Yes,
please. Can I please just have an example of what is a single-use item? Not a plastic bag. I understand a plastic bag. What is a single-use plastic item, for example?
Plastic plates, plastic silverware.
I mean, paper. So like water bottles?
Yeah. Straws. I mean, we can substitute compostable materials. We can substitute paper. And for some of our employees in some of our departments, for a while, we may have to substitute paper because, as I heard from one of our employees who was quite concerned about it, not every department has access to a sink and, you know, facilities that allow you to bring your dishes in and wash them and put them up to dry. And I would also, in connection with this motion, urge admin and the other departments as we go through this process of upgrading our facilities and building a new center of government, that we make it possible for everybody to have access to those facilities.
I have Amanda and then Martha and then Leslin.
Oh,
you, oh, continue. I'm sorry. Yeah, continue.
So, thank you. I am, lest anybody think that I am anti-environment, I'm not. My biggest concern always is the cost of stuff. Yeah, we have to pay the piper if we don't take care of the environment. But paper products and compostable products are priced at such exorbitant rates that it makes it very difficult for the average person to be able to afford them. I know we run into that problem at GIEC, and we're a department. When we attempted to have the dish truck do our events, because we thought, what a novel idea, then everybody who came complained because dishes weren't turned around fast enough, and, you know, the forks, even though they were washed, were too dirty, and, you know, it just became a nightmare.
So I wonder, when are we going to consider a companion in encouraging manufacturers and businesses to not raise prices that the average person can't afford it for the things that are compostable and for the paper products? They are outrageous. And it makes no sense to me that we get rid of one, which I understand we need to, but we don't have anything companion. So I am asking whichever committee, whoever it is, there's some place that we start, you know, Tompkins County is good for pushback and for lobbying, that we start something in that area so that people aren't struggling when they go to the stores.
May I respond?
Yes.
There's a second piece to this that Barb Ekstrom and Admin is going to be working on, which is going to be a broader policy that will discuss options for different types of items that we can use. And what has happened in other jurisdictions which have passed laws, for example, about polystyrene, mm-hmm. is that the idea of an affordable substitute means that it can't be any more than 15% more expensive than the comparable plastic item. I don't know if Barbara wants to address this or not.
Maybe there's something coming, but it's not.
Yeah, there is something coming.
For it when it comes. You don't have to humor me now.
Okay.
Real quick, what we're talking about here is in county use. So this isn't for consideration for the public. When we do our solid waste plan, we will be considering that. The environmental product procurement resolution that we did a decade ago that did not pass at the legislative level does include a price differential. It's not just 15%. It can actually be what we want it to be. But the price differential these days Styrofoam, for example, in plates is quite a bit cheaper, but we have to take into account, you know, the whole the life cycle cost. One of the things that I am very actively involved in, both at the state level and the national level, is what we're calling product stewardship, where manufacturers have to take responsibility for the products that they generate. In Canada and Europe, the situation is very, very different. Manufacturers actually pay for the disposal costs, whereas here our poor communities are the ones paying for that. We just saw the adoption of paint product stewardship, which means that will be a savings to both residents and the county. We're seeing it for batteries. We're seeing it for a number of products. Packaging is also on the list. So that will be part of our solid waste plan. But in the meantime, we're just going to resurrect that old environmental procurement resolution. We're going to work with the purchasing and finance department and with the committee to come up with a best practice.
Okay. I have Amanda, then Martha, then Anna.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks, Barb, for clarifying. Yeah, Leslin, this is not for the people in the county. This is not for staff. This is, like, staff can still use whatever they want. They can
bring it from home.
They can bring home a disposable plastic tray and throw it away at work. It's not, we can't tell staff what to use, but this is what Tompkins County government will purchase. So, and Barb and Jason and the team are going to come up with, you know, more details. And I think I had something else to say, but I'll leave it at that. Thanks.
Okay, Martha.
Yeah, that was what I was going to say, that this is not about telling people how to bring their lunch, but, you know, for the events that we hold as a department, and if that costs departments more, then we'll you know, have to build that in.
Yeah, I understand, and I think Amanda just brought this up, but that or Deborah, that you will be creating a policy that will then come back to the legislature anyway. So we'll have a second pass of that. And the other thing, I know some of us have discussed, but I just want to make sure, Jason, that it's your thought, and Barb, it's your thought on this, that
It's not just what alternatives, but also an evaluation of facilities and what, you know, what limitations facilities have and what potential, you know, infrastructure needs might be in place. Not necessarily that we can do them, but an evaluation of, and is that partly also?
Yeah, I think yes. We have a series of facility improvements over the next decade that we can definitely incorporate as we go through this process. But yes, so like I said, some departments are a lot easier than others. You know, my department's relatively easy to do, while other departments have different challenges. So Barb's group, Barb's team is equipped to help those departments assess their needs, what can be done easily. This policy is somewhat of an addition of a procurement policy to aid departments in giving them clear direction and guidance as to how to go about making these changes.
Okay, Michael.
Leslie, your point is well taken. There's no question that we have to think about some of the folks that have to buy items and things that might be more expensive for them. Tompkins County has always been on the cutting edge of so many things, and unfortunately it costs our people money because we do that. Often we are the first in among counties. I'm not proud of the fact that it costs more money, but often it does. And this is an example of how we can move forward to having less plastic. I hope that we are going to take the 5-cent fee that we're going to have and actually put together a reasonable program in order to distribute from the money that we get from that out to our residents, particularly our low to moderate income people, the reusable bags that they can have, as an example. But whenever we take an action like this, it costs somebody money. And those folks that have the least money are the ones that are hurt the most.
Is anybody else? Because I have something to say and then I have questions. All good? What I wanted to say is I really like the way this is written, because it's not saying we're going to throw away everything we have right now. Because I'm looking over at the water cooler going, and I've always wondered why we have so many plastic cups there. But, I mean, that's probably, you know, that's what this is for, right, is so that we actually start looking at these things and go, oh, okay. And I did want to say, too, you know, it's interesting. I live right down the street from the Dunkin' Donuts, and they switched this year. They switched to paper cups. They still have the plastic top, but they're all paper cups. But it's interesting as to why it took them a while to do that. They actually had to design a cup that you could take, and it's hot, and you're not going to burn your hands. Mm-hmm. And I congratulate McDonald's. McDonald's did this a couple of years ago, and that's actually locally owned by two Cornelians, and they were way ahead on that. They went and switched to paper cups quite a while ago. Polystyrene, I don't really – the way I see it used just doesn't really make a whole lot of sense. So I thank you for bringing this forward, actually. I think the single-use silverware is going to be harder, and I think there's other things going to be harder, but I think that's why it's written the way it is. It's, it leaves us some give, whereas we can look – it's like it's a beginning and not an end kind of idea. I have a question for Jason. Do we not – do our departments – do we not centrally buy?
Not necessarily. That's not exactly the easiest thing to do either. There are some – you know, departments in certain facilities can, but my guess is that – that question will probably come up as we go through this process, but right now it's not necessarily that we buy one product for all departments.
Is it because we just don't buy a lot of stuff? I mean, it's not like we're running a cafeteria or anything.
You know, you're at a size of an organization where you have different facilities, different needs. That's not to say that it couldn't get better and there isn't more opportunity there. Plus, sometimes you're not going to save a whole lot, because a lot of this is – there is some state bid contracting. There's some set pricing that may or may not always impact things. But my guess, and we've kind of talked a little bit internally, that as we go through this process, it's going to kick up some of those questions again. Yeah.
Okay. And the only thing I did – one more thing I wanted to say, though. I don't like the idea if since I'm saying this is a beginning and not an end, I don't think we should ban the use of single-use water bottles. I know Julie is, if she's watching. But I think that the research behind that shows, you know, people still need, they'll still buy stuff, and it'll be a soda. And I would rather people drink water than soda. And it's just something to look at. I know they're doing this in, like, airports, which I find kind of what do you do? If you didn't bring your water bottle, you're in an airport. And plus, you probably had to throw out your airport, at, you know, your water at security to get through security, and now we're, now you don't have access to water. Right? So that's one thing that I'm hoping you look at as a committee. So thank you. All right, so that is on the floor. Oh, we have one more speaker. Oh, there you go. Sorry, Ann.
I agree with most all that was said, so I wasn't going to add something, but since after you, I just want to comment on what you said, Mike. The,
well, then, no.
Can we revisit the vote for temporary chair? I just wanted to say that the cups at Dunkin' Donuts and other places, they have a plastic lining, so you still can't recycle them, but it, so I don't know if it's better or not. But I just wanted to say, too, that... hitting the gavel kind of threw me off. Oh, what was I going to say?
It works.
Oh, the airport.
We knew where she was going. We all knew.
So there are, when folks are traveling, I don't know what, I know a lot of people bring a water bottle, and you can, you just have to make sure it's empty as you go through security. And so I always bring a water bottle, and then you, they will refill it once you get on the plane. Or at our new renovated and expanded airport, on both sides of security, they have water fountains where you can fill your water bottle. And that's something that Dave and I, or at F&I, we talked about for this coming year, is to look at can we have more water fountains, especially the kinds where you can fill the water bottles, because that's a whole different type of water fountain, including, you know, looking at for, you know, for here to phase out our plastic cups. Thank you.
A year old, you know, you could just you hold on to them. Yeah.
All right.
A year old bottle.
Anybody else would like to speak on this issue? It is on the floor. Let's take a vote. All those in favor of what is the resolution D with the amendment? That is unanimous. Thank you very much. Thank you, Barbara. All right, moving on. That was the only one that was pulled, right?
Yeah.
We're going to move on to standing committees. Right? Standing and special committees. First up, F&I, Dave McKenna.
Thank you, Mr. Temporary Chair.
You're welcome,
it's
Dave.
It's amazing to see a Republican standing in that position. Anyway, we met on December 19th. And we discussed the two resolutions that were passed on the consent agenda, and I have one additional one, which I will move now. It's Resolution F, document ID 9095, and that is to approve funding of PIN 375593, County Route 110, Ellis Hollow Road, Phase 3 construction, Town of Ithaca, and I will move that.
Thank you, Dave. Do I see a second? Martha Robertson. You get to second everything. The second.
I have a question.
Yes. Yes, Martha.
On, in the memo, Dave, it says, back at page 12, it says that there's that it's 10-foot, where'd it go? Two 10-foot wide lanes and variable 3-foot minimum paved shoulders. Then farther down, it says, mentions widening. Do you happen to know whether the shoulders will be wider or but stay with 10-foot lanes, or what's the plan?
I don't know for sure, but knowing that road, I believe the shoulders will probably be widened. I don't think it's quite that wide.
Can you use your mic, Dave?
I believe it's with the shoulder, but I don't know that for absolutely sure.
Okay. All right. I can call Jeff tomorrow. So. All right. Thank you very much.
Yep. Does anybody have any other questions? Statements? Okay. All those in favor of this resolution? That is, nope. Are you voting yes or no? I'm sorry, that looks, okay, that looks unanimous. Thank you very much.
Okay, and in addition to that, under the transportation title with Mr. Lane, we had a discussion of the Ludlow, the state pushing the construction on the Ludlowville Bridge. get my tongue twisted here. So that it gets done ahead of the Route 34 bridge. Otherwise, there's no way to get from here to there. So I guess that's going to happen. We also talked a little bit about the Freese Road Bridge, and my understanding is that that is still in discussion. The town is still in discussion with the state DOT and the state historic preservation offices to resolve exactly what they're going to do with that. And the other thing that Mike brought up was that the George Road Bridge in Dryden is scheduled to begin next month or in March, depending on when the weather breaks.
All right. Dave McKenna, thank you very much.
Mike?
Yes. Martha, go ahead.
There's a public meeting about the Freese Road Bridge. I think it may be run by the town, so it may be not Jeff's, not county highways thing. So maybe, I think it's the 15th of January. Does that ring a bell?
No, but...
Okay.
I would guess it's run by the town, since the only thing that the county's got to do with it is approval of the plans for, maintenance.
Okay, so it's the 15th. I'll find it and send that along.
That's going to be probably at the town hall. Okay. And I had one other thing that I wanted to mention was that the review of the public safety facility by Labella, we're supposed to be getting some kind of an update on that within the next 2 months or so, according to Jason, and we'll be looking forward to hearing about that. So that's my report. We will meet again January 16th at 1 p.m. in these chambers.
David McKenna, thank you very much. Mike Lane, Government Operations.
Government Operations hasn't met since our last legislature meeting. We have an abbreviated meeting coming up. And remind me, Kathy, what date we're doing that on?
January 17th at 10 a.m.
17th. We have a couple of resolutions on our agenda tonight. I'd be glad to move them or answer questions. Appropriation from Contingent Fund, Terminal Pay, Board of Elections. This is Resolution G. It's 9053.
That is so moved. I need a second. Leslie?
Short roll call.
Oh, and this will be a short roll call. Do we have any discussion? Okay. Short roll call.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Anna Kellis?
Yes.
That's it.
All right. Any opposed?
Any opposed? No? All right. That passes. Thank you. Mike, Resolution H.
Establishing the 2020 meeting dates. I can move it, but I also have a proposed substitute. So should I...
Let's get it on, and then we'll do the amendment.
Let me move it. Let's see if we get a second.
Second for that? Thank you, Amanda.
We've had some discussion about the meeting dates. We originally, in the resolution, as in your packet, did not have a meeting on July 7th, which is the first meeting in the month of July. Similar to what happened last year, because of the inconvenient date for the 4th of July, I think it was on a Thursday or something. It was brought to our attention, thanks to Dan Klein, that if we didn't have our meeting on July 7th, we would go actually 5 weeks between meetings, which is a little longer than we usually go. So I don't know what the folks want to do, but I do have a substitute resolution that adds that July 7th meeting back in. I guess I would have someone move the substitute. I don't know if I can move my own substitute.
Yeah, you can move to amend it.
But then, is your seconder think it's friendly?
Well, then it becomes an amendment. All right, I would move my own amendment.
Right, do I have a second? David Catt. All right, discussion, Martha.
I think adding July 7th back in makes sense. That's a really long period because there, it turns out there are five Tuesdays in June, and, you know, every calendar is different. But I wonder whether August 4th is a date when we could take that one out. I'm sure it would help departments and administration because of the crush for the budget conversations. And I think it was really fine not to have one of the summer meetings, but this taking out July 7th is way too long of a gap, I think, in my opinion. So I don't know if that's something that the committee might go back to, if the staff would take a look at it, what's the best course. But that would I'd be interested in canceling August 4th.
I'd be happy to take that question back to committee. I certainly would think that our administration and probably consulting with department heads would want to look into that to see what they thought. I don't want to speak for Jason, but nope. That would be my guess.
We can ask the question tomorrow at the department meeting.
Deborah, I thought I saw your hand now. Okay. Anna?
No, that addresses my turn.
So now the question becomes, what do we want to do? We want to send this back to committee?
Nope.
Nope. We want to vote on it as is?
Yep.
And then we can make adjustments later?
Wait, amended. Amended.
On the amendment.
On the amendment.
Okay.
With July 7th in,
right,
and considering later on removing, okay.
Gotcha. That sounds good. All right. All those in favor of basically the schedule as was in your red folder that includes July 7th, and we'll consider taking out another date later on. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13.
14?
No. All those opposed? 1. Leslie. So 13, 4.
To vote on resolution as amended.
Now we have to vote again on it as amended. Okay, so now we're going to vote on it as amended. I thought, no, we just
did. Yeah, we did just vote on it as amended.
That was friendly.
Because it was friendly.
Oh, it was friendly?
Yes.
Oh. I know. Okay.
You're keeping this whole ship afloat, so don't worry. All right. Well, thank you, Mike. Anything else on the meeting?
No.
Okay. Thank you. Planning, Energy, and Environmental Quality Committee, Deborah Dawson.
Yes, the Planning, Energy, and Environmental Quality Committee will meet on Tuesday, January 21st at 9:30 a.m. Among the exciting topics we will be taking up is a resolution encouraging the adoption of Governor Cuomo's proposed ban on extended polystyrene foam, and I expect we will also be hearing from the EMC on their study of forest management.
Any questions? I just wanted to tell you, I was at the Chamber of Commerce, the government meeting they have on Mondays. They actually have a pretty good list for you. I'll try to relay that to you. It's of kind of what the Chamber is thinking is going to be their main topics, and HABs was definitely one of them, you know, harmful bacteria. It's the lakes.
Great. Thank you, Mike.
No problem. Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee, Mike Lane, Chair.
We did meet on the 20th of December. We spent a lot of time reviewing some of the things we've done over the year, and also had discussion about some serious personnel issues. We will be continuing those discussions at our next meeting, particularly how we're going to get into the issues of retention and recruitment at the county. We had a number of resolutions. We heard the last report from our public information officer, Marsha Lynch, who of course has retired now, and we're looking forward to seeing how that is restructured and the proposal for restructuring, and also the recruitment effort there, which we're concerned about. We'd like to see that move as quickly as possible. We're really grateful to have Jeff Dunn here tonight. I know he's working hard to help us through this transition period. Jeff, we thank you for that. I have two resolutions. I haven't answered any questions I can do. Resolution Resolution I, appropriation from contingent fund, terminal pay, finance department. That's ID 9090.
That's so moved, Mike?
Yes.
Okay, second. Deborah Dawson? All right. Any discussion? This is a short form roll call vote.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Anna Kellis?
Yes.
Any opposed? Seeing none, that passes. Thank you, Kathy. Resolution J, Mike.
Well, this, unfortunately, is one we have to do every couple of years. It's Resolution J, request for authorization to extend the additional 1% sales tax rate in Tompkins County. That's ID 9069. I move it.
It's been moved, seconded by Amanda. Any discussion? Yes, Mike.
One of the things that NYSAC has tried to do over the years is to get the New York State Legislature to make us not have to do this every 2 years. There seems to be some political controversy from time to time downstate that the legislature likes to be able to play some of the counties off against the state as to whether or not they're going to get their sales tax reauthorized. We've never been a part of that except to stand by and wonder whether our sales tax was going to be renewed the same as most other counties. So I think it's important, but I think we need to keep up the pressure at the state level to say this is the wrong way to handle this. If it's been authorized, we should have it until we ask for it to be different.
Anybody else like to speak on this? Okay, I'd like to. I usually, every couple of years, I speak on this just because I usually don't vote for new tax, or it's not really new tax, it's a tax we redo every year. I usually don't vote for stuff like this, but we have such an inflow of students. I really see this as one of the only ways that we can capture and so that everybody has skin in the game. And that's kind of how I look at this tax. I will say I don't believe that we should be taxing heating oil and other heating products. And if you heat your home with electricity, I don't believe that should be taxed because I believe that's something much like food that, frankly, you can't get along with in this county. I understand that would be a large hit to Rick's figures, but would still like that to one day be considered. So thank you very much. Mike, anything else?
No.
All right.
So, did we vote?
Yes. Okay. Moving to the vote. Sure. No. All those in favor of Resolution J? That looks unanimous. Anyone opposed? No. Okay, Glenn, I'm sorry. So 13 in favor, 1 opposed. Sorry about that, Glenn. Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee. Leslie McBean Claiborne.
The Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee has not met since her last legislature meeting, so I have no report. Any of the members of WEIC has anything they'd like to report on? No. All right. That's
it. Thank you very much, Leslie. Housing and Economic Development Committee. Anna Kellis, Chair.
We will be meeting on the 23rd, and instead of our normal 9:30 time, we'll be meeting at 10:30. The reason is because we were trying to accommodate the city IURA meeting, where they would be making a pretty significant decision on the conference center, whether they would be putting forward a proposal that would have the conference center or who would not. That would not. They could not get quorum for their 23rd meeting, so their meeting will be on the they take a longer holiday break, I guess, than we do. I don't know. But their meeting will now be on February 6th at 8:30. That will be an important meeting, so I'm saying their meeting first because I encourage everybody to attend who's interested in the conference center. It'll probably be a great discussion. At our next meeting, though, on the 23rd, we will be continuing our conversation about the county's role in housing, specifically focusing on county's role with respect to housing services. Amy Hendricks has been working extensively on that. Thank you, Amy. She has taken on the role of doing a lot of organizing with
our COC initiatives. And she and I have been working on presentations and also encouraging all departments and agencies that are working in housing services to join us for a conversation. And then we will also be beginning the conversation about what we would like to focus on next year on housing and economic development. So that will be on the 23rd. That's my report.
Thank you very much, Anna. Any questions? All right, thank you. Complete Census Count Committee. Mike Lee.
Back to me again. I did want to mention one thing at budget I forgot to do, and that is we have now rescheduled the interviews with the two direct reports, our Director of Finance and our County Administrator, on for January 15th at 4:30 and 5:30. That's a special meeting that will be done in executive session, and certainly any legislators who would like to attend are invited.
Anything about the census?
Yes, we had a that was something else that got postponed besides the direct report interviews from December. We had a meeting on yesterday, and it was really kind of an exciting meeting, I have to say. We have a group of people here that have come in on the census issue to assist our committee, our basic committee. We have reports from, for example, the public library. We were joined by Lee Dillon from the Tompkins Community Action, who is a good conduit for information to, she said, about 4,000 hard-to-reach people, including children. Children are some of the most undercounted in the county, along with students. We had Kate Dillon, another Dillon, who is from the Census Bureau, came in. This was her last meeting. We now have two local Tompkins County people who are taking over for her. And one is Richard Bennett, and the other is Z, and I can't, her last name. She pronounces it she.
She, Lean. Lean. Lean.
Okay. Who is a bilingual, and I think will be a great addition. We heard from Amy Hendricks talking about the effort that particularly she and Nick Murphy have been working on for the grant from New York State of around $130,000. And she did tell us that the state was supposed to get back to us for more detail by the 30th of December, and apparently the state hasn't done that yet. We're right there where we ought to be, thanks to the efforts of county administration, but we haven't heard back. We want some of that money to do things like help us hire some interns or others to help people be able to fill out the census forms online, our mobile activities to get set up with places around the county where people can come in, particularly elderly or other hard-to-count folks, people who might not be computer savvy. So we're appreciative of that. We're waiting to hear whether the state will fund all of the money which they designated for us, or part of it, or we don't know for sure. But it will go a long way to what we've been needing. We're doing advertising, posters, signs on the buses, and we're trying to also, the census right now is trying very hard to get people to sign up as census workers. They need over 1,000 in Tompkins County, and Tompkins is the worst county in the whole, I don't know, whole region upstate where we are, as far as being able to meet their goals of people to be census takers. And I think it relates a lot to the fact that we have a strong economy, and if you walk around to any businesses, you're going to see a sign up saying they need help. And so that folks, even though these part-time jobs pay well, they are difficult to difficult to fill right now because there are other opportunities for people. If you're bilingual, we're looking for those folks, and some of the residency issues can be waived for bilingual people. We are looking for, apparently I just got an email given to me, a copy of it, from Betty Conger in Groton, who had apparently made an effort to become a census taker, and she told us that they turned her down because she was an elected official. So if you're an elected official, it's probably not a good idea to apply for this. You do have to be a legal resident in order to be hired. You don't have to be a citizen to do that. And if we can't find enough, they will be probably trying to move people in from other counties to try to go do some of the door-to-door work that they're going to have to do. So there's a little bit. I thought it was a great meeting we had yesterday.
I have Martha than Anna.
Mike, do you know how old you have to be? What's the minimum age?
18. I suspect 18.
It's 18.
Okay. Thank you.
And if I recall, it's 17 an hour, correct?
No,
it's 18 an hour.
They raised it.
18. They raised it.
They raised it to 18.
It was 17. Okay, that's good to know. And people would apply where?
They got to do it online through the Census Bureau.
And then indicate that they're Tompkins County.
Yes, Annie.
I could be wrong, but I believe at one of the original orientations we had, they said you could call and they would help walk you through it, too, if you couldn't do it online.
That's probably true.
Thank you.
Anyone else? Okay. Thank you very much, Mike. Downtown Facilities Committee, Glenn Morey, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Downtown Facilities Committee met on January 2nd. The main purpose of this meeting was to discuss and implement interim parking recommendations for parking at North Tioga Street. As Jason mentioned tonight, closing occurred Friday, January 3rd, and this was due to a resident not moving out until January 3rd from the Red Building. A resolution was passed at the legislature A resolution was passed that the legislature spaces will be moved from North Tioga Street to North Tioga Street and be removed from the present location. Parking spaces at North Tioga Street will be used for legislature, management, and confidential staff. Access for Sarah Street to the parking lot will be blocked off to vehicles with access for pedestrians. Access for parking lot will be the first come, first serve. Minimum lighting will be installed, appropriate signage will be installed, and repairs completed where necessary. The approximate start date will be January 13th, and this is because we'll need an MOU for the white collar, which is a memorandum of understanding for the union. And our next meeting is scheduled for January 13th at 4 p.m. here.
So I was there for the discussion.
That was your motion, by the way.
Yeah, I know. Just want to be clear. So what's being removed is the designation of those six spaces as legislator spaces. But do we have the ability to have a hunting license here like anybody else, or are we required to be over there on Tioga? What was the understanding?
My understanding is first come, first serve.
So we're like any other employee now at this point. Okay. Thank you. Starting Monday, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, if we can get the memorandum of understanding in place, we'll then do it at communication to all employees.
Yeah, you already did.
We did already did that.
So it's starting the 13th. It's starting Monday. Unless we're going to tell all the employees we told that they can't. That they can.
I have Deborah than Annie.
I just want to be sure. So you're not eliminating the legislative parking spaces until this new regime goes into effect?
Yeah. I mean, the signs will probably be coming down either Friday this week or early next week.
Okay.
The one thing I think it might have been left out, I remember Glenn covered it, is that there'll be a designated spot identified in this lot for a facility maintenance vehicle.
Right.
Because I don't know if
that wasn't it.
That's primarily because when a lot is full, we have facility maintenance vehicles that are pretty much double parked, and it's creating. So
there will be one direct, there will be one spot committed to that, and signage identified for it.
So I wasn't clear. Will the so who's going to be parking over on Tioga Street? Is it anybody or and
it's wasn't permitted. It's permitted parking. It's permitted. It's employees that are permitted to park in this lot, and that is overflow for this lot. So it's the downtown in these four buildings. The employees in these four buildings.
And so we won't, for legislators, we won't have designated spots at all?
Correct.
So not even over at the other parking lot?
Correct.
There's plenty over there. There's tons. There's more than all the employees downtown. They count both sections. Yeah, if you count what we have over there, it's more than one for every employee.
Go ahead, then.
Thank you. What we've never had is designated parking for the public, and I'm hoping that sometime down the road, a month, two or three, or whatever, the committee might consider that question. Thank you.
Mike.
Sunday I was down here and walked around. I told Jason this and walked over there. It was weather pretty much like now, but there's a lot of mud holes and water standing there, so I hope that we can get some gravel brought in there to at least fill those holes until something more permanent can be done. But I don't want folks having to wade in the water when they park, if they do park over there.
And that was part of the resolution.
Huh? Anyone else? I have a question. The red building, so who's moving in there? Or are people moving in there?
Nobody's moving in right now.
Is everybody out?
Both buildings are vacant. Facility staff is going to winterize them.
Oh, okay.
If they haven't already.
Gotcha. And then we'll just turn the heat off or something?
Oh, they'll probably keep the heat on for the pipes. I know Jay Franklin's been working with Arel just to ensure, but they'll winterize them and lock them up. And we'll be responsible for doing the snow removal on Sears Street as well as on North Tioga, just on the sidewalks. And then we will also close off the Sears Street access from vehicular traffic, but ensure that pedestrian movement can still get through on Sears Street. But the only way to entry and exit off in the lot will be on the North Tioga Street side.
Great. Anyone else? Okay. Thank you, Glenn.
Mike.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I had to go find it. I went back to the census. This coming Monday, January 13th, our Tompkins Workforce New York Center is having a training session. So no appointment necessary. Center Ithaca, 171 East State, Suite 241. So anybody can go if you're interested in finding out about the training, about the jobs. This coming Monday.
It's also morning and afternoon, is it not?
There's something like that. I don't have all of those details, but 272-7570, if anybody wants more information.
Yeah.
For the census, right, yeah.
All right, thank you, Martha.
So, right?
Oh, yeah.
So with the new parking regulations, is the court limited by where they can park, or they can park wherever they want to also?
Yeah, this doesn't change their arrangement with the courts. They'll continue to park in their tandem spots.
Okay.
All right, thank you. Public Safety Committee, Rich John, Chair.
Thank you, Mike. Public Safety met on December 19th, and the principal report we had was from David Sanders, our criminal justice coordinator. And for those at home, I just wanted to give a brief summary of why we had him come speak. In the 2018 budget, this legislature made significant investments in alternatives to incarceration, for various new positions and new programming. One of the positions we added was a criminal justice coordinator position for a couple different reasons. One is to try to coordinate the different programs that are going on and the groups that are involved, and he chairs the Criminal Justice Alternatives to Incarceration Committee that meets on a monthly basis. But he also is responsible for data collection and data analysis, and we had our first deep dive look at the data that has been generated regarding our our system since we've made these changes. And in big picture, we have done an extraordinary job. I say we, but it really isn't us. It's the staff and all the not-for-profit agencies and, you know, probation, the sheriff, the district attorney, the assigned counsel, mental health. This has really been a team effort, and we have seen our jail numbers go down substantially. We made these changes because we had lost a variance from New York State where our jail was allowed to have up to 100 people in it, and they removed our ability to double bunk in 18 beds, so it brought it down to 82. And with something called classification, it meant that you really can't have 82 in the jail. It's some number lower than that. So we were really concerned, and that's why we decided to make those ATI investments. We have seen our numbers go down. We have not seen the crime rate go up. We have not seen a significant increase in emergency calls for criminal matters. And the number has been such that we have been able to board in at times, meaning we can take inmates from other counties, which is something we were worried about, having to send inmates out and spend money. We've actually received some income. And I would note that if you go to the Tompkins County Sheriff's website, there's a jail statistics page. The last entry is for December 31st, and the number is 39. 39. We were worried that we were going to have trouble when we went from 100 to 82. Our programs seem to be working and working extraordinarily well. And I would suggest this is a model that could be replicated in upstate New York with careful adoption of the less costly programming that we've been running. In connection with his report, we also heard from him on some areas where we have room for improvement. And one of the key indicators of recidivism, of people going back to jail, is the lack of housing. And we talk a lot about housing at this legislature, and it certainly deserves discussion from a public safety standpoint as well. We also talked about the impact of the New York State legislative changes on bail and discovery, and what we're going to have to do to track those impacts on our community. And one of the more difficult areas that we have not seen significant change is in disparate minority impact in our jail population. While the overall number has gone down, the percentage does not track to our general population percentage. And this leads to, they led at our committee meeting to, I think, the beginning of a very, very good discussion about what our priorities should be for 2020. And certainly that issue and housing and tracking bail and discovery reform probably are going to be things we're going to be talking about more. We will be meeting on January 16th here in Chambers at 3:30. We'll be having a report from Patricia Buchel, the Director of Probation. This will be her last meeting before her retirement, and she's going to be talking about the rehabilitative model used by the Probation Department for people receiving services. So I'm happy to answer any questions.
Anyone? I have a question. Did you touch on this? You might have. We're only 7 days into the bail reforms. We haven't seen an impact on that, or have we? Or
I've certainly heard there's a lot of complaining. You know, there's uproar. I think there has not been acceptance that the process used to institute these changes was really very well done. I think there's Tompkins County is in much better shape than neighboring counties because we have worked so hard to reduce our jail population overall. We've adopted positions on bail that largely correspond to what the legal changes are calling for. There will be some impacts. We were trying to predict how many people this would take out of our jail, and I think there was a pretty good effort to address that number before the beginning of the year, and that might be why we saw that extraordinary low number of 39. I would note that with that number of 39, there was one board out and one board in. I'm not quite sure why we were boarding out and boarding in at the same time, but yeah, I anticipate we will have a lot of information on those two issues, bail and discovery, very soon.
I have one more question, and then I have Deborah and then Henry. This is not a bad problem to have. Is there a number that we get to that's so low that the jail can't really function? You know, it's almost like you get to such a number, it's like, why do we even have a jail at this point? We can't keep it running. You know?
No, we can keep it running.
Well, I don't know.
I mean, you know, county law requires that we have a jail.
Okay.
I think it's Section 217, if we want to look at it. And the Commission on Corrections prescribes minimum operating requirements. We might be able to make some staffing changes, but I don't think we get there for a long time. And in fact, I think across the state, because of the changes in the bail rules, the Commission on Corrections is going to have to look at their overall models on how jails have to run, because they're driving operational cost and locking it in, whether a community needs it or not.
Gotcha. I had Deborah, right? Deborah, Henry, then Martha.
I'm just curious. You said that we had a board in, and I remember a couple of months ago the state told us we couldn't take any more board in. So what's going on?
I believe there's the ability to take board ins in extraordinary circumstances, and it probably was one of those, but I don't know.
Okay. Thanks.
Henry.
And allegedly, during the State of the State address tomorrow, Governor Cuomo is going to address possibly changes to bail reform, at least entertaining changes to bail reform for the next year.
Thank you, Henry. I have Martha than Mike.
Yeah, to follow that, I think it's going to be a lively conversation at NYSEC, and Henry and Rich and I are on the Public Safety Committee there. So I'm going to study up our four-page resolution really well, but it'll be a lively conversation. I talked to Dave Sanders today at the downtown luncheon, and he said, you know, he's a little worried that our numbers were going up. He said they were 37 and 38 and then 40. I'm like, what?
40?
40? Well, I was astonished. So, but it, interestingly, he said, you know, certainly the disparate impact of ethnicity and race is an even greater concern. He also pointed out that parole violators, sort of the number of parole violators, is kind of holding steady, which means it's a bigger and bigger percentage of our population. We still have work to do.
Certainly the parole issue is far bigger if it's driving us to have to board out and spend money, and that's not happening now. But I would think, following on bail and discovery reform from a state standpoint, the treatment of parole is really due. If you look at the recidivism levels of people on parole, it's terrible. It's not working. These people should be dealt with in a way that they're not going back to prison, and they just are.
Anyone else? Oh, I'm sorry, Michael, yes.
One of the sad things about having to board out over the years was that we tended to board out women prisoners because we usually didn't have enough to make it economical to staff them locally, so we would send them to other counties. What's happening now? Are we just fortunate not to have many women prisoners, or are we guarding them ourselves? What's happening with the women?
Yeah, we're holding them here.
We're boarding in.
All right. Seeing no more questions or commentary. Health and Human Services Committee, Shauna Black, Chair, and I see you have a resolution, too.
Yes, thank you so much. I do have one resolution that I would like to move. Resolution DOC ID 9081, appropriation from contingent fund, mandated psychiatric expenses, Mental Health Services Department.
All right, I have that moved. Second. Anna, Kellis. And this looks like it'll be a short-form roll call as well. Any discussion? Martha?
Yeah, I'm looking at the memo or the note on the next page. And so, Jason, it seems like there was a big number in 2018 and then budgeted for 2019 half of that. So is there Is this something we're going to adjust going forward, or
what? So we, this in this budget year, we decided to take another year to observe it. The past 2 years, there have been escalated costs, and just because basically the discussion was, let's see if there's more trending in another year, and after there's, we feel that it's going to continue this way, you know, I would say the first time we're going to revisit this is probably the budget retreat. We'll get a good sense if we see that this is going to be a new level of sustained amount of funding to support this. These are individuals that can't stand trial, but are have a psychiatric, they're in a psychiatric institution as a result of certain factors. So we're required under by state to pay for their housing. And I think some of the standards have changed, and as a result, we're having higher costs related to this. So we just chose to observe it. We kind of knew that this was going to come as a contingent request this year. We'll see if it continues into this year, and if so, then we may have to slowly adjust it over the course of the next few years in the budget process.
Thank you.
So a short form roll call. Anybody else have anything to say? No? Let's move on. Kathy.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Anna Kellis?
Yes.
Any opposed? Seeing none opposed, that passes unanimously. Thank you. Sean, anything else?
Yeah, we actually met today. We had our committee meeting, and we went over a few things. We went over our goals for 2019. I'm happy to report that we actually achieved many of our goals that we set forth back in February. Our first one was to support the hiring of the next director of Office of Human Rights. We interviewed 3 people a few weeks ago, and we're still having conversation on which candidate we might be pursuing further with an offer. The second priority was find solution to our housing challenges, including supporting our long-term goal of housing the homeless population without putting a large portion in motels during Code Blue or regular stays. And right now, St. John Shelter is working with 3 local churches, and many of our population are staying at the churches. We do have some families that are staying at the hotel, but the majority of people are staying in the church, the churches. And then our third goal for 2019 was to evaluate the current effectiveness of the combined mental health and public health director role and develop a plan for the future of both departments, which includes a recommendation to the legislature. And of course, we did that a few weeks ago. So we were right on task. And the other thing that we had a presentation today on the STEP program, which we are currently doing and part of solving for our homeless issue. We did pass a resolution that brings out $175,000 out of contingent fund in order to expand the program for the next few months and to offer more help to people that need it with housing. It's not going to be tonight that we're going to pass that. Budget will see that resolution, and Jason will also do the presentation for your committee, and then it'll come back for January 21st. So.
Thank you, Sean. Any questions? Seeing none, moving on. Thank you very much, Sean.
Thank you.
Individual member filed resolutions. I didn't see any in the packet. Anybody have something to spring on? No. All right. Minutes of the previous meeting, December 17, 2019. So moved, Shauna. Seconded by Deborah. All those in favor? All those opposed? Seeing none, that was unanimous. Thank you. Unfinished business. We're going to go back to the two. First, we're going to choose leadership. Do you want to just mention that it is before 8 o'clock? I don't know what to tell you. I'm wearing blue. Something there. I just want to
break.
Yes, why don't we do that? Why don't we take a 5-minute break because it's almost 8 o'clock? Let's take 10 no. minutes. What? Do you want longer?
2 minutes.
No.
Or do you guys want to press on? I'm all down with whatever you want to do. Deborah's not. She's not down with. She wants a break. Why don't we take a 5-minute break? We'll come right back. 5-minute break. Clock starts now. I'll even turn on my little alarm. Okay, remove it from the. No, I'm listening.
No,
we are all in the room. You're all in the room. Everyone is in the room, so I figured it was a good time to start again. Jim upstairs? He is. All right, we're going to start with the Pledge of Allegiance. All right. So we are going to make our first order of business our last order of business. Everybody seated? Yeah, we're ready to go, right? Cool. We are going to do the election of the chair of the Tompkins County Legislature. So we have two people on the floor. I think we can dispense with kind of doing one. Oh, I'm sorry. We have to lift it off of the table. So do I have a motion to lift that off the table? Deborah Dawson. Do I have a second? Glenn Morey. All those in favor of lifting this off the table, please raise your hand. That is unanimous. Any opposed? No. Unanimous. Thank you very much. All right. So we have two people running for chair. We have Michael Lane and we have Anna Kellis. Does anyone else want to announce their candidacy for chair of the Tompkins County Legislature? Got to give you the option, Lesen. Every year, I think she's the deer. She'll jump. But seeing none, we're going to close nominations. I guess we just move right on to the vote. All those in favor of Michael Lane for chairman, please raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. I have 7. All those in favor of Anna Kellis for chairwoman of the county legislature. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. So it's 7-7 still. We're going to take another vote on that. And then I'm going to look for some guidance on how to proceed. We have Michael Lane for chairman of the Tompkins County Legislature. All those in favor of Michael Lane for chairman, please raise your hands. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. All those in favor of Anna Kellis for chairwoman of the Tompkins County Legislature, please raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Again, we're deadlocked on that. I know people want to move ahead to vice chair. Some people do. Other people don't. Martha, do you have you were the chairwoman. That's why I'm going to defer to you.
I move to adjourn this meeting.
I have a motion on the floor to adjourn this meeting. Do I have a second? I have a second from Glenn Morey.
Point of order.
Point of order, yes, Dan.
Yeah, all right. Maybe that's not the right motion. Point of inquiry, I believe. I have a question about the rules where it says the chair and vice chair shall serve a term of 1 year or until a successor is elected. So we have elected a temporary chair, so that question is resolved. Is the vice chair from last year still the vice chair at this moment?
We're all looking at you.
We have, the language, again, is somewhat ambiguous, and it comes up in, actually not just in this circumstances, but in others. So in the past, we've regarded it as no. We had that issue several years ago that we would consider that once the temporary chair was appointed and the organizational ended, that we would not consider the vice chair to be currently serving. Granted, there are other interpretations of that.
Yes, Annie.
Can we elect a temporary vice chair?
It's not in the rules anymore.
It doesn't matter.
I mean, there's no process in the rules for that. I'm not sure why we do that, because there is a temporary chair at the moment. Unless he's deposed.
Right. Well, if this goes past tonight, which it looks like it is, then there's meetings with our administrator. There's different things that are. Right. I don't know if people had any interest in doing that or if it was possible.
And the acting chair. I mean, so when this happened last time, and Frank Proto was the acting chair, he continued the acting chair through the next meeting and began the next meeting as acting chair.
Martha.
We usually have our committees just our committees are going ahead in January as they did in 2019. Our staff is fully capable of running the organization. Everybody is fully empowered to meet with Jason or talk to Jason or any other, as usual. I don't see any purpose in inventing a new position of temporary vice chair.
I do promise not to retake the town of Hector. We should be good. Yes, Rich John. Remember, though, this was a point of order. It started off. We're discussing just so that people feel a little bit better about it. But please go.
Do we have a motion on the floor?
We have a motion on the floor to adjourn, and we do have a second for that. And that was a point of order, and then we flushed it out a little bit. And I would like to vote on the adjournment. So, is it a point of order, Dan?
No, I'm discussing the motion.
Oh. Fair enough.
Thank
Go ahead, Dan.
Thank you. I'm going to vote against this. I think we should be voting for vice chair tonight. As simple as that. So that's why I'm voting no.
Yes, Mike.
As I said before, it hasn't changed since 5:45. It's really pretty aggressive to say that we're going to eliminate the idea of somebody who loses the chair vote considering the idea of running for vice chair.
You could change your vote then. That would take care of that problem.
Yeah, Dan, thanks so much. Appreciate that advice. Okay. So could you comment?
Yeah. Fair enough. Any more points of order? Okay, so we do have this on the floor. All those in favor of adjournment, please raise your hands. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. All those opposed to adjournment? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. It fails for lack of 8 votes. So, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I move that we hold the vote for vice chair.
Okay. That motion is on the floor. Do I have a second? Deborah Dawson. So the motion is that we have a vote for vice chair of the Tompkins County Legislature. Discussion. Yes, Martin.
We need 8 people for a quorum. Is that right?
Yes.
So if 7 people left, we wouldn't have a quorum, correct?
Are you suggesting that?
I'm asking a question, Mike.
Are you suggesting it?
I'm saying that some people are really recalcitrant here and don't want to allow the idea that somebody might want to consider running for vice chair if they lose the chair election. I don't know what the force here is. I don't know what the stubbornness is. It's really weird. We've done this before. It's not the end of the world to leave it as it is for 2 weeks and see what happens. I mean, this is really trying to push something down people's throats. It really is. So another alternative
is asking for a vote. That's not pushing anything down people's throats.
It eliminates somebody considering whether they're going. Yes, it is, Dan. It's eliminating somebody's option. Eliminates my opportunity to nominate somebody.
You're eliminating my opportunity to vote for vice chair.
No, we're just postponing it, Dan. Once there's a vote for vice chair, the candidates are set.
Martha, I'm going to have 2 more people speak, Deborah Dawson and then Rich John, and then I'm going to call a recess. If you guys want to talk about this, fantastic. If you don't, then you don't, and we'll come back. But Deborah, please go.
If the rationale for delaying this is to afford a person who's running for chair who loses to run for vice chair, I guess the simple logical thing to do is ask the 2 people who are running for chair whether, if they lose, they would be interested in running for vice chair. Because if their answer is no, then there's really no reason to put this off.
Mitch John.
Yeah, I'm uncomfortable trying to leapfrog voting for vice chair before chair. The 2 positions are connected. Certainly the chair position is more important. And while from a housekeeping standpoint we might think that it's okay, let's get done what we can get done, looking at the rules, the vote for the chair and the vice chair are included in the same sentence. And you can interpret it as you might, but it does look like there's a connection between the 2. And certainly, as we treat the 2 positions, they are connected. I feel uncomfortable voting for vice chair without knowing how the chair vote is resolved. I think that's good governance to know that before we vote for vice chair. Thank you.
Martha, I said we're going to take a little recess here without any more speakers. I'll let you speak if nobody else has to speak. Is that all right? All right, Martha. Well, one last thing.
Yeah, I just, recess. I mean, I certainly think there's no problem with Shauna as prior vice chair, you know, meets with Mike Sigler, with Jason in a leadership meeting. That's, you know, two meetings in between the time now and when we meet. I mean, I think until an election happens, it's a hypothetical question. And I don't think it's fair to put our colleagues in this position. I mean, for example, depending upon who might win, a different candidate might oppose who's not even thinking about it right now. It doesn't necessarily mean Mike or Anna might run for vice chair. It might mean somebody else says, oh, okay, that's the chair. Maybe I want to balance this body, and I'll put my name forward. It's a hypothetical question until the chair vote is done. I think we should trust each other and let ourselves take the time that we need.
All right, Mike, one last thing.
I've been standing for chair since I first announced my interest in November. I'm interested in being chair of the legislature. I am not interested in being vice chair.
Thank you.
All right. Well, because we'd have to move to adjourn back, put it back on the floor because it already failed. So why don't we recess for 5 minutes? We'll come right back.
Anna had her hair.
Sorry, what?
Anna.
I'm sorry, Anna. You saved by the candle.
I'm finding this all to be exceptionally strange, to be perfectly honest. It seems like there was a lot of thought put into how this meeting would play out, and to be honest with you, a lot more than I did, specifically with respect to the vice chair vote. I do think that there are people who might want to consider a vice chair, depending on who is chair. I would certainly encourage it. I don't think that needs to be me. It seems that is what you all are interested in knowing, whether or not specifically I would be interested. But I also think that the not allowing for this meeting to adjourn and continuing to have a 7-7-7-7 is what I'm finding particularly strange. If people want to push a vote, then all right, we'll continue to be stalemated at a 7-7. And I don't think that it rests on just Mike and I.
Mm-hmm. With that said, I'm going to say something real quick, too. We're going to take this five-minute recess. I hope people, eventually we have to come to something. I mean, we could stay, I suppose. I mean, really, it's fine. I will say, if it does end and I'm the temporary chair, if you have anything that you feel that needs to be addressed by the county, I mean, I'm pretty communicative with Deborah already about our town because she tells me when traffic lights are out and I tell her when there's other stuff. So. But, you know, if there's something that's coming up that you think that needs to be covered that you think is going to be missed, you know, we're an email away. I'm not overly concerned about it. It's not like this is my first rodeo. I mean, I have the shirt because at 10 years, that's one of the things you can get. So anyway, so we're going to adjourn for 5 minutes. We'll see if anybody, has a change of heart, and we'll be back. So thank you, viewers.
Do you want to have
so I still have it on the table.
Well, they were just printed. Because they were updated.
I'm ready. I'm reconvening. Oh, I'm sorry. You're in the back. I'm reconvening this meeting of the first meeting of 2020 of the Tompkins County Legislature. I want to mention to GO that I think they should take up a way to end a meeting when there isn't votes for it. All right, so there is a motion on the table. I'll wait till Martha makes her way back here. The motion on the table is a vote for chair of the Tompkins County Legislature. The two candidates that have put their names forward are Anna Kellis and Michael Lane. We'll vote the same way we've been voting. Well,
I'm sorry. Who made that motion?
No, I'm sorry. Scratch all that.
Yeah, scratch all that.
Sorry. The motion on the floor is to adjourn. No. That has been moved and seconded.
Kathy has her hand up.
Kathy has her hand up.
The motion on the table is to have a vote on the vice chair.
Oh, all right.
Moved by Amanda Champion and seconded by Deborah Dawson.
That's what I meant. You're keeping this whole bus. So the motion on the floor is to whether to vote on vice chair. So all those in favor of voting on vice chair, please raise your hands. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. All those opposed? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Okay, so 8, that fails. Do we have any more motions? Martha, you have a motion?
I move to adjourn the meeting.
Martha has moved to adjourn the meeting. Do I have a second? Glenn Morey is the second. All those in favor of adjourning the meeting, please raise your hands. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. Did I miss somebody, or are we? Is somebody
yes, over? For opposed.
Okay. All those opposed? Mike Lane. Well, thank you very much for coming, and we will see you in 2 weeks. And let's talk now. Fair enough, Michael. Thank you for saying that. Special meetings. Right? I think so.